additional housing, or if you really wanted to destroy the Dolphin Lee and raise it and build something better, you would have a project that people could actually move into directly. Although the question would again arise about the qualifications for moving in that I think I talked about earlier. You probably heard me on
yes.
that. So I'm trying to figure out what residents want once they know that there is no certainty they will get this housing back again. And my suspicion is that they're going to say no thanks once that's made really clear. And I know when I talked to Tim Fitzmaurice on Sunday, he kept saying, well, to get that housing is a real challenge for us. And I said, well, no, it's not a challenge for you. It's
right.
a challenge for them, because you're going to be in your housing, wherever the hell they happen to be. And, you know, me and you, Phil, we're both going to be in our housing. But the rest of these folks are going to be wandering around looking for housing because, I got to say it, do-good liberals who want a nice fancy project to put on their resume didn't realize or didn't care or are too committed. I'm not even sure of the political dynamic here. Why is the city council so single-mindedly focused on Dolphin Lee? Is it because that's the only project they had on the boards and they needed it to grab the federal money? I mean,
I've heard that, and it does seem consistent with other pieces of information. That my understanding was that they actually let things drag on so long without taking any sort of positive steps that they arrived at a point where they had to designate a certain amount of money for a certain degree of specific project, or by a certain date, which was something like just a month or two ago, or something like $2.5 million worth of funding from the state, I believe, that they had accumulated over the years for affordable housing would have reverted to the county. So this last minute thing, what do we got? How can we spend this money? The plan on the table was the Dolphin Lee, so they said okay. It was that thoughtless a process.
Hmm. Well, I think that the real question is to consult is what the tenants want, and it looks like with the city running around in the beach flats as they were last weekend, you know, I guess they inspected every apartment building. That's what I heard from Maria Gutierrez,
mm-hmm.
the manager of the Dolphin apartment complex, and confirmed by several of the residents. They're telling them, according to my rudimentary Spanish, that there's this wonderful project that they're just going to try to make sure that they can all come back, and they just, you know, they'll be moving out for a while. They're giving them a story about what is likely, about what they hope will happen. And I really think that a lot of people here have a lot of good intentions. The question is, have they precluded realistic alternatives that might actually provide real housing for people while pressing forward with a project that seems to be the darling of buyers and Andy Schifrin and Mercy Housing, but is really not shared not just by the tenants, not just by the broader community, but even by numerous people within the scan that tried to get, you know, that was considering this project. Santa Cruz Action Network, this came out of went through the Housing Committee, a scan, and they tried to cut it back and say, wait a minute, you can't just, you know, simply, you know, use this as a kind of a bandwagon to ride on. We want to consider a number of projects, but when it came down to it, though Tim says he did consider a number of projects, I'm not really convinced. I have not heard his reasons for rejecting the other projects.
Well, didn't you just identify a reason that he expressed, namely that if seaside land were used, vacant or unoccupied seaside housing or demolished seaside housing on land that is still residentially zoned, if that were used to build affordable housing, then when the city, if as it goes as anticipated, actually acquires ownership of some of the tidelands on which Seaside Company has been parking its day trippers, then those day trippers would have to be parked on this other land, and therefore it couldn't be used for housing. To me, this is bogus kind of reasoning.
Wow.
You know, that the Seaside Company has got a way for decades now with parking their customers on publicly owned land, and now that we're finally catching them on it, we're going to provide them with some other land on which they can park their land, on which they can park their day trippers, land which only with some of it within the last 10 years was occupied by people where the Seaside Company scarfed it up, vacated perfectly habitable housing, evicted all the people, demolished the housing without permit, and as removed housing, and now you're going to allow them to park cars on it?
So what you're suggesting, Phil, is that it could be that the reason they don't, that the city council doesn't want to take vacant land and build on it, is because they have some deal in mind for giving the Seaside Company parking areas on their on the other land, and in return for getting some sort of small part of the river property that is currently
right.
in a legal dispute.
Well, you'll recall the Third Street realignment, of which this is a lingering component. That would have truncated the eastern end of the beach flats with a road that would have been put there, the so-called realigned Third Street, and all of that area, which would have been on the boardwalk side of that new street, which included 18 housing units that they were going to demolish. All of that area was to have become parking so that they could then expand their boardwalk operation onto some of the area on which they're now parking. This is just the extension of that, and we're again providing for the expansion of the boardwalk, and that's what Tim Fitzmaurice seems to be alluding to.
So what's to be done, Phil? What do you suggest should be done by the community to make sure that whatever the motivations and mistakes of the city council, that they get pointed in a better direction?
Well, a factor that I would like to point to is the absolute economic wastefulness of what's being proposed here, given the desperate need for that money and affordability in housing in this city, to spend the next 5 years of all the money available for affordable housing on this project, which results in a net loss. The numbers, the correct numbers, I believe, are 63 units of affordable housing are demolished to be replaced by something like 50 units of new housing, for a net loss of 13 units of affordable housing at a price that totally consumes all available money for affordable housing for the next 5 years, to me, is a tragic waste of that badly needed money.
So what can be done now in this situation? What do you want the community to do?
Well, I think the community has to call for opening of this whole subject to a public study and discussion of what's best. It's never been done. This money just gets spent from the top down. The people for whom the money is intended, namely low and moderate income people, aren't involved in the process on any level. They don't even have some token advisory board, much less a meteor commission or task force, much less the project area committee, which is clearly required by redevelopment law when you're talking about dumping several hundred people out of their homes like this. They have been totally left out of this process, and the decision is made from these middle-class types pontificating for them, full of patronage and self-congratulations, and the product is invariably been this overly priced thing that is really doing an enormous disservice to low and moderate income people, because that money could go a lot further and benefit a lot more people if it were being spent more wisely. And the study needs to be, they need to go back to the drawing board and re-examine the entire
right,
subject.
But what does the community need to do? That's what I'm asking.
Demand
you.
That. Demand that the law be upheld. With regard to the project area committee,
are you any further along with your lawsuit?
We are proceeding. Yes.
You know, I'm going to cut you out quickly because I only have 10 minutes left. I want to see if anybody, including Councilmember Fitzmaurice, might be listening at the end of his radio, or possibly somebody else, to get another view. But Phil, I think you put yourself eloquently, and I encourage people to to give a call to you for more information on how to help in this process if you're organizing it. I know the Beach Area Working Group, when it was in operation, did the trick in turning the public awareness on this issue. I'd like to see a successor group do the same. Got a phone number you want to give out?
423-0170. And thank you for your continued study of this matter, Robert.
Hey, hopefully I'll get some more data to bring before you.
Cool.
Thanks.
And, of course, the city council number to call if you would like them to actually expand housing instead of contract it and possibly, seems to me pretty definitely, destroy housing for a number of people in the process of building affordable housing. Call 420-5020. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. If you are wishing to call in, I know that I missed the city council's last Tuesday meeting because, as you heard earlier in the show, I was being arrested over in San Jose with the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry. So I just didn't get to that meeting. But I understand at that meeting, Councilmember Hernandez talked about a campground. Councilmember Fitzmaurice talked about expanding the Homeless Resource Center, that there was some talk about homeless projects. Of course, nothing about decriminalizing homeless people. I think Hernandez talked about safe sleeping zones. And by the way, I put in a call to Hernandez requesting he call me back. And regarding this whole question of is the Dolphin Lee substandard, or are there, let's put it differently, are there numerous complaints against the management that are resulting in findings of any kind of objective basis that there's really irremediable conditions there in the Dolphin Lee? And I called Linda Garner today of the building inspection. She told me that she was having a closed investigation that could not be revealed until it was finished, which would be any time from 1 month to a year from today. And I said, okay. Well, then I'd like you to give me all information on past complaints about the Dolphin Lee. She then told me she had to contact City Attorney Barisone to see if that information could be released. And she called me back shortly thereafter and said that Barisone was not sure, but was studying the issue. So our city attorney is checking it out, and hopefully will get back to me soon before I start trolling for an attorney for a Freedom of Information Act request to make sure that information does get public. Because frankly, the whole thing stinks to me. And no matter how many times I hear Tim Fitzmaurice telling me that it's all for the good of the people, that's all to protect the Hispanic community from the free market, much as I believe that I share that objective, I don't see the road that is leading in that direction going that way with that kind of solution. In other words, I wonder why he's not making other turns in the road. Why did he choose to support a project, other than simply being a sort of a political supporter of Catherine Byers and her Mercy Housing project that she's resurrected from several years ago, possibly because of a time problem? We don't know. This stuff happens behind closed doors, which I think is a significant part of the problem, folks. And so we got to do is open up those doors. 420-5020, no on the sleeping ban, no on evicting Hispanics from the beach flats and destroying housing in order to save it. No thank you. Yes on real affordable housing. Yes on real protection for homeless people outside from violence by letting them at least shelter themselves if the city doesn't have the compassion, good grace, and sense to use its resources to really put into meaningful affordable housing or meaningful rent control, or let's say such a thing as an emergency measure, a stopgap campground. 420-5020. And we're getting down to the wire here again, only 7 minutes left, which means all this tape that I've got is looking pretty useless since it's a lot longer than 7 minutes. What am I going to do here? I have something that looks kind of interesting. Santa Cruz Action Network was supposed to deal with a lot of these issues, and as usual, has run the other way, instead endorsing candidates that are pretty useless group of candidates and propositions that are either a slam dunk no-brainer, like no on 21 and 22, or else not doing anything at all. This year's scan made no endorsements of ending the sleeping ban, for instance. You might say they have their old endorsement, but there's nothing new, and they are not making city council members accountable for not standing up to support basic rights for homeless people. We have an incoming call.
On Free Radio.
Robert, Ed Pry.
Hi, Ed. Well, Ed, you actually, we ran into you in court I guess it was yesterday, wasn't it?
Yesterday morning, yes.
And you were fighting for tenants' rights in a case which involved Mercy Housing, which is the organization that is slated to get the lion's share of the money, most of the money, if not all the money, for the affordable housing, as well as then inherit the property,
right?
Because it will own the property. And you were representing tenants who were having problems with Mercy Housing, right?
Yeah, Mercy Housing has been anything but merciful.
Tell me a bit about what happened and what's happening with Mercy Housing, as you understand it.
Well, my clients, a man and woman in their 60s, and they have a daughter who's 18. We're living in a mobile home park in Soquel, which was slated to be rehabilitated. In other words, reconstructed and redesigned. Put a bunch of new ones in, along with a few old ones back in. But the whole thing had to be vacated so that they could do their work. And so my clients had to move to another location in Soquel for a six-month period. And they were assured that they could stay down at this other new place for this, you know, temporary period and then move back in so long as they were tenants in good standing. But Mercy started giving them a lot of assurances, you know, even before they moved out of the original place, that they could move back in when everything was ready. And they even offered to pre-screen their application so that they'd know ahead of time whether they're going to be eligible for a new unit up there. So my clients filled out all these applications. They went through all this whole process for 9 months, and then come October of last year, they all of a sudden show up on my client's door and say, well, you got to get out of this temporary place because we need this coach to move back up to the new project. And my client said, well, where are we going to go? I mean, can we move into our new place up at the new project? And they said no, and it's not ready. Well, you know, so my clients had really no warning that they were going to have to vacate and have no place to go. And they're low-income people. That's why they were living at the place in the first place. You know, it's a redevelopment project. So they qualified for low-income housing. So all of a sudden, they're supposed to move out and with no place to go. And after all these assurances that they'd had, you know, and so Mercy said, sorry, get out. And that was it. And so my clients stayed because they had nowhere to go. And so then redevelopment and Mercy, who were working together on the thing, brought an eviction action against them. So we cross-complained for the right to get them a new unit up at the new place, because by then Mercy told them, "Well, sorry, you're disqualified because you had these evictions in your past history." And my client said, "Well, wait a minute. Now we've been pre-screened, and you told us we were eligible." And they said, "Sorry, we didn't know about those evictions then." But, well, what does the pre-screening mean then? You know. So in other words, they told them they were going to give them an advance, you know, screening, but they really didn't. So now my clients have to get out of this place, and they have nowhere to move to, and they're low income, and it's really, I mean, he works as a sweeper at the boardwalk. You know, that's what kind of money they make. So now we're in trial with Judge Kelsey, and Judge Kelsey is not being very sympathetic or open to these people, and it's not going well. But we're going to file new briefs in the case next week, and then have a hearing the following Monday, the 28th, and then the judge will make his final decision, both on the unlawful detainer case against my clients and on their cross complaint against Mercy and Redevelopment. So that's where it stands, and I'm madly doing federal regulation research on it, trying to salvage the situation for them.
Wow, so Mercy is not the top shelter provider in your book, huh?
Mercy is, yeah, they're owned by the Sisters of Mercy, but, you know, what these things are, the Mercy owns like $300 million in assets all across the country, 31 different states. It's a big tax dodge for rich Catholics is what it is. And they're doing the same thing down in the boardwalk, down near the boardwalk, or Beach Flats there, and they don't care about people, they just care about, you know, making a lot of big salaries for selected Catholics, and providing a lot of tax deductions for, you know, the super rich Catholics. And I'm a Catholic myself, so I'm not, you know, criticizing.
A Catholic with a big family, I might add.
Right.
How many kids do you have?
The old-fashioned kind of Catholic.
Tell me how many kids now.
Oh, well, let's see. Hers, mine, and ours, it adds up to 10.
See? So you are a real Catholic. You're not one of these phony baloney Catholics.
That's right. The genuine article.
Listen, we're talking to Attorney Ed Frey. I would like to ask you lots of questions and actually have you go on, but I've reached the deadline, and I've got Earth First coming in with a hatchet. He's going to attack me if I don't get out of the studio immediately.
It's Uncle Dennis, Ed.
It's Uncle Dennis.
All right.
You know who he is. So listen, thank you, Ed, for giving us this briefing. I'm hoping that we can talk to you further on this, because it sounds like there's some questions I know that some people out there will definitely like to hear about.
Beware the quality of their mercy.
Ask Ed if he takes illegal broadcaster cases.
Do you take illegal broadcaster cases, Ed?
Absolutely. I used to be in the business myself, as you recall.
Typical, man. The guy is... I'm not even going to talk to you anymore.
Okay.
Thanks, Ed.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Running out of the station fast so that Earth First can run in. We're going to go out on Phil Oaks, and then at any point you may suddenly see that overturned by the weird sounds of the forest and the field, and you know what that means. It means it's Earth First time. Come on back on Sunday, 11 o'clock to 1:30. We will throw a bunch of stuff at you, the stuff we couldn't play today. If you can't wait till then, call us at 423-HUFF, and we will huff at you. 423-4833. Thanks for being with us, and hey, glad to have been on the air with you.
Oh, I am the unknown soldier who died in World War II. Didn't want to fight, it was the only thing to do. I was the victim of a world that went insane. Will you show me that I didn't die in vain? Remember me when the crosses are a-burning. Remember me when the racists come around. Remember me when the tides of peace are turning. Remember me and please don't let me down. On the South Pacific Islands and the Iwo Jima Sands, we raised the flag of freedom over many distant lands. Every time I killed a man, my own heart felt the pain. Will you show me that I didn't die in vain? Remember me when the crosses are a-burning. Remember me when the racists come around. Remember me when the tides of peace are turning. Remember me and please don't let me down.